morning.
Hey, good morning, Mark. Great to be with you.
Thanks for joining us. How are you?
I'm doing great.
So this idea...
Spring, SAP's running, or will be.
Yeah, soon. All right. Well, I'm glad you're optimistic about that.
I am.
So let's talk about where some of your proposals are sitting here. The discussion yesterday, a lot of discussion about job cuts. This is a lot of jobs you're talking about, you know, 300 plus.
It is. And, you know, here's the point. We have no choice. I mean, we've got over $100 million challenge. Everybody knows that we have a very hardworking, extraordinarily dedicated state workforce. But we cannot get there without going after the real costs in our budget. And a huge part of Vermont's budget is payroll for hardworking state employees. So there's never been a financial challenge like this that any governor has faced without working with the state employees to come up with part of the solution to the problem. When Governor Douglas went through this, he actually did a 3% pay cut for 2 years. I restored those as soon as I came into office because times were looking better. We've since then given 2.5% increases on average while I've been governor. We're now in a mess where we've got to fix this challenge that we have, where we're spending more than we're taking in. There's just no question that the state employees have to be a part of that process. So we can do this two ways. We can do this the smart way, which is to come to the table, make adjustments in compensation collectively with the union that would get us to the $10 to $12 million in a minimum that we got to get. Or we can do this the more difficult way, which is to do the layoffs. And obviously, I'd prefer the first.
Why couldn't you just impose a pay cut, or can you?
Well, the legislature...
Why could Douglas do it?
Well, actually, Douglas negotiated that agreement. The VSEA came to the table.
Okay, so they reopened the contract then.
Well, I can't recall whether it was a reopening or they were negotiating one anyway, because I wasn't governor at the time, but I can tell you that's what happened.
Okay. How can the Agency of Human Services, which, you know, is here to protect children, protect the elderly, protect, I guess, all of us in some respect, and the Agency of Natural Resources, supposed to be protecting the environment, how are they going to absorb million-dollar cuts?
Well, let's remember, we have thousands and thousands of state employees. And we obviously would, this isn't our first choice, let's be clear about this, but we've got to work with what we've got. So we would have to find ways through both layoffs as well as retirements to get where we'd have to go for the number. Listen, this is what I do know. This attitude that the state employees have expressed, that we can solve all these problems by just raising taxes on Vermonters, is not in a real world. We can't do that. Vermonters are not at a time. There was a clear message in this election, and it was, we, the middle class in Vermont, are frustrated that our incomes aren't going up, that our bills keep going up, and that we don't have the loot in our pockets to pay the bills we wish we had to pay in our own households. You can't just keep taking money from us. And the state employees are saying, hey, no problem, just turn to Vermonters and have them take care of this by paying higher taxes. I just don't think that's in a real world.
You don't think the wealthy could absorb that?
Well, I mean, let's talk about that. Let's talk about the wealthy. If we were a state that had tons and tons of wealthy people, and that we weren't taxing them, the answer would be yes. But we're doing both. We are one of four states that has the most progressive income tax in the country. And when you really get into the numbers, they're pretty startling. I just got to tell you this talk we do about taxing the wealthy. We have 1,200 Vermonters in this state that pay 21 cents of every income tax dollar. So, in other words, at the top, there are 1,200 folks currently paying that tax at the top. The other startling thing about it is that there are only 175 of them,
right,
that make more than $500,000 every single year. In other words, of that 1,200, a lot of them are folks who sold their body shop, a
right,
one-time gain, or sold their small business, one-time gain. So, you know, in Fairfield County, Connecticut, you'd find that many people on one block in Greenwich,
mm-hmm,
Connecticut.
Mm-hmm.
So the point is, when we talk about raising income taxes in Vermont, we're raising them on the middle class. There aren't that many of us to pay the very top that we keep referring to. So it sounds great, it's just they aren't there. In big numbers.
244-1777, toll free 877-291-8255. Let's go to Moortown. Mike, good morning. How are you?
Pretty good. Thanks for taking my call, Mark. Governor?
Yeah. Hey, how are you?
Pretty good. I guess I have a couple comments and one question. Governor, last week you were kind of attacked by a caller for your personal wealth, and I would disagree with that caller in one way, that yes, you earned that. That's the American dream. You shouldn't have to apologize for that. But to agree with the caller, I would say that anybody with $1 million in their bank account is not like the typical Vermonter. So kudos for you to standing up, and kudos for him for saying that you're not like the average Vermonter.
Can I just say I agree with that? I never disputed that. All I'm saying is I was the average Vermonter before I made the money here in Vermont, and I don't apologize for that. And all I'm saying is, listen, we're all in this one together. And, if we start saying those folks that go out there and make a good living in Vermont and create jobs shouldn't be a part of the solution, I think that's neither fair nor wise.
Well, I would agree. I mean, you kind of lived the American dream and made two businesses, and that's great for you. Who here wouldn't like to do that for themselves and increase their own bank account?
So, okay. Right. And can I just want to make another point about this? I ran for governor as the first governor in many, many years. I was born and raised in this state, and that made every penny that I've earned in this state, building business in Vermont. You know, I ran because I wanted more Vermonters to be able to have economic prosperity. And that's why everything that I do is focused on how do we find ways to go after the real cost drivers that are holding down Vermonters' incomes, that are holding Vermonters back from prosperity. So, you know, that's why I would argue, doesn't matter what you have in your bank account, we're all in this one together.
Well,
did you have a question,
true,
Mike?
I guess there are certain tax deductions that are supposed to help trickle down in the economy, but that's another story.
So did you have a question there?
Yes, I did.
Okay.
Relates to these cuts in state government.
Yeah.
I think I know, and several people around the state probably know, long-time employees with 30-plus years. That's all well and good for them, but why don't they pull over and retire and make some room at the bottom? I've worked multiple temp assignments for the state and still trying to get in, but it's time for some of these people that probably and hopefully put away for their retirement just pull over and make some more room. So I'll hang up.
Okay. Thank you for your call.
I think you're absolutely right.
Early
about
retirement
that.
Program. Are you going to maybe do that?
And you've made a really good point. I can tell you that right now my administrative team is working on answering the question, what is holding folks back from retiring who have put in their time and done great work for the state? Because we're finding that, as you've just expressed, that for whatever reason, the last several years, there have been more folks who stay on beyond their retirement age and beyond the point where their retirement fund is actually really continuing to gain for them the way that it's structured. So my secretary of administration is looking at that. We think there might be some opportunities there, and that will definitely be on the table if we can figure out a way to create the incentives and actually save Vermonters tax money. So good point, and we're on it.
We're talking with Governor Shumlin, 244-1777, toll-free 877-291-8255. What was the reaction you got during the town meeting break, if you got any reaction from anybody, or I guess since it passed, this House education bill that's going to create larger districts, cap spending for a period of time?
I got to commend the House Education Committee. There's going to be no confetti parades for the bill that brings school spending under control, but we got to do it. And there isn't a Vermonter out there who doesn't get that. There's going to be lots of disagreement about how to get there. But what I'm really encouraged by is, first of all, the House Education Committee took the recommendations that I made in January as the basis for their bill. Then they added a couple of pieces, including the cap that you're referring to, that they're continuing to work on. So what I'm going to say is this. I don't think they think that cap is perfect, which is why they're continuing to work on it, even though it's been voted out of education. I'm going to give them a latitude they need to explore that, to work on it without shooting bullets in their ideas. I'm thrilled that they've adopted the entire package that we put forward to help us get school spending under control and reduce property taxes for Vermonters.
But do you like the concept of this cap idea?
I'm not going to comment for the simple reason that there isn't a Vermonter out there who wouldn't like to cap property taxes. the devil's in the details. It's very, very difficult to do effectively, and that's, I think, what they're finding.
I mean, how could you in any way support it the way you dumped on Scott Milne when he came up with the idea during the campaign?
Well, this is a very different proposal. What Scott Milne said was cap property tax, cap the money that Vermont sends back to local communities to support education, but let them continue to spend. And then there was no way to actually reduce the spending. So that makes no sense. What this proposal is actually saying, exploring, is can we say this is all you can spend? There's a big difference. So in other words, he was creating, in my view, more of a problem by saying to local communities, we're not going to tell you what you can and can't spend. We're just going to say there's a cap. Now listen, this whole cap discussion is very tough. It's not going to be an easy solution. I'm going to refrain from commenting in terms of what I think about it until I see whether it actually gets any momentum in the House. Let's give them the room they need to try to figure out whether they can even get one that works. Scott's definitely didn't.
The press reports this week suggest that you may be more open to this sugar-sweetened beverage tax than you've said in previous weeks. Is that a fair assessment?
No. I don't know. I read that too, and I was surprised by it. Listen, all I've said is, at this point in the session, it is not helpful for a governor to sit there and give their attitude and their view on every single move the legislature makes, because we all know that in the end, we sit at the table in May with all the proposals, and we do what's best for Vermont. So I'm trying to refrain from doing that on not only taxes, but on the cap idea and the other stuff. Just give the legislature the room they need to do their work. Having said that, listen, I've made my view on taxes very clear, and I have been very clear about the sugar-sweetened beverage tax. It's a regressive tax that asks the poorest among us to pay the most. I don't support regressive taxes.
So no way, no how, or not?
Well, you know, I never say that for lots of obvious reasons until bills get to me, and I took that advice from all living governors that I've talked to about how to try and be a good governor. You know, you don't sit around and say, I'm going to veto this, I'm going to veto that. You just don't do it. But listen, I really just don't think it works. And I don't think it's right for Vermont. But the challenge we have in Vermont right now is that low-income people are hurting more than they were in a Great Recession. So anyone that thinks that the sugar-sweetened beverage tax isn't going to affect the pocketbooks of those who have the least money in their pockets, I just don't see how you can argue that. So, you know, if we argue on one hand as Democrats, let's raise taxes on the folks who are making tons of money, and then, unfortunately, there aren't tons of them in Vermont, but, you know, let's pretend there are for a second. And then we also say, but we're going to raise the biggest sugar tax ever passed in America, and we're going to ask the poorest of poor to pay for it because it's going to be good for them. You got to wonder.
But you spent weeks last session talking about how terrible the cell phone legislation was, and then you signed onto it and made it almost sound like it was your brilliant idea. You going to do that with this, too?
I don't think that's exactly what I did.
Well, okay.
I expressed my concern that my real concern with the cell phone legislation was that, with all our good intentions, I suspected that Vermonters were still going to, at times, talk on their cell phones when their kids were calling in, whatever, they're going to pick up the phone.
Mm-hmm.
And what I didn't want was points on the license when you did that. And I accomplished that, so I signed the bill. I never said, I hope, that I thought, you know, not having Vermonters talk on cell phones when they're driving, you know, it's a really great idea to talk on your cell phone when you're driving. Be distracted. That makes our roads safer. That wasn't my position. On this one, I really feel strongly that we're going to ask the poorest of the poor, the people who can least afford it, to pay a really high tax, and I don't believe it's going to change behavior.
Let's go to the phone. AJ, good morning. How are you? You're on the air with the governor.
Good morning, Governor. Good morning, Mark. Thank you for taking my call. One thing nobody is talking about anymore is taxing income from trust funds. I've been hearing that there's quite a few people out there that are living on trust funds, and they don't pay any income tax in Vermont on that at all. And the other thing is, how does the spending on Burlington schools affect the rest of Vermont? I know in Berlin, our school spending goes down, but our taxes still go up. And that capping us wouldn't have done any good to reduce our tax rate, because it's affected by the spendings in other districts. It's always easy to spend someone else's money.
Right.
And the other thing that I'd like the governor to address is to stop characterizing the state employees as inadvertently perhaps, but he's saying, oh, well, they want to tax for hardworking Vermonters. And they, you know, they don't want to give up. They want to put it all on hardworking Vermonters, which implies that state employees are not hardworking Vermonters. And I think that's a mischaracterization.
Yeah,
and I'll hang up and listen.
Thank you.
Every time
I mention state employees, I say my hardworking state employees. I said it on the show already this morning. I'll continue to because they do work hard. They're dedicated. I just disagree with the union's position that Vermonters can take the hit by paying higher taxes. So we'll disagree on that point. On trust funds, I've never had a trust fund, but what I understand about trust funds is that that basically the concern is that people who have trust funds have stock and bond income that goes untaxed. The fact of the matter is that this is widely misunderstood in Vermont, but in the last 4 years, we changed our capital gains tax laws on dividends and interest so that you now have a $5,000 exclusion. So let's just say, is that right? Is it five?
Four.
Four. Sorry. $4,000 exclusion. So the senior person, you know, the senior who put away $100,000 over their years of work doesn't get taxed on the stocks and bonds on that $4,000. But after $4,000, it's treated just like ordinary income. And under ordinary income, we get taxed in Vermont if you have a big trust fund or lots of unearned income at the same rate. And it's a high tax rate, one of the highest in the country. So it's tough to be a trust funder and avoid taxes from our perspective. I don't know how you do it unless you did nothing but buy Vermont tax-free bonds, which play a very low return. And finally, on the school question of spending, you're right. Because we have a statewide property tax, we're all collectively in a position where we've got to bring spending under control in every community across Vermont. And that's why this discussion about passing a bill that changes the structure of the way we deliver education to make it more affordable is so critical to every single community, regardless of your own vote. Because we're all in this one together with a statewide property tax.
Let's go to Montpelier. Tom, good morning.
Yeah, I just had a couple quick things. And first off, if you just level funded this year's budget at last year's amount, what would we save? And the other thing is, when you only have $30,000 a year and that's your income, you figure out, you know, what can and you can't do. But it seems like, of course, every time you guys do this, everybody, all these special interests come out. So why don't you just say if it's going to take a 1% or a 1.5%, 2% cut in the budget to balance it, why don't you just do that right across the board and everybody suffers equally, and just like in a household, you guys can figure out how to make it work, and right. I'll just hang up and listen.
All right. Okay, that's a good question, and you're right. Basically, when we talk about cutting the state budget, we get to a pretty small percentage of what we're actually able to cut. But let me tell you why. The state spends about 33 cents of every dollar funding the education fund that helps reduce property taxes. So there's a very strong feeling in this building, and I agree with it, that we shouldn't be shifting our fiscal problems to the property taxpayers who then have higher property taxes. So we take school funding off the table. In other words, the education fund is held harmless, as we call it, from cuts. That's a big percentage of our state budget. Then we take off the table our funding of our retirement funds that are an obligation that we have, that's a very large percentage of our budget as well. If we underfund those, it just means that future generations have to make up that underfunding that we do now. So we pass the cost to our kids and our grandkids. Not fair. Lots of states have made that mistake. Vermont hasn't. So we take that off the table. Then we take off the table other pieces of the budget that I won't go into here because the answer would be too long. And when you get down to it, you end up with a pretty small percentage that we're actually able to cut. Now, my budget that I introduced was a 1.9% increase over the budget that I introduced and that we passed last year before we started making rescissions when we saw the bad fiscal news. So a 1.9%, you know, budget is sustainable. It makes good sense. It's a lot of tough choices. I'm asking the legislature to adopt that budget.
Bart, good morning. How are you?
I'm just fine, thank you. Good morning to you and,
hey.
And the governor.
How you doing?
Fine. I'd just like to make one point about state employees.
Yep.
When state employees gave up the 3% when Governor Douglas asked them to, It was understood by everybody we weren't giving up our steps. The steps were frozen, and then under your regime, the steps were not given back to the state employees, and so therefore every year state employees are giving up part of their paycheck for the well-being, the financial well-being of the state. And
so can I just interrupt you for a second? I don't believe that to be true. The step process is exactly the same as it was when Governor Douglas was in office. And what that means, as you know, is that when we negotiate a 2.5% increase like we did this year, it really means on average that state employees get a 4.7% increase in pay. So that's still happening. And all I've said is, listen, if you, as an example, were to not take the 2.5%, but take the 2.7 that's left in your steps, or not 2.7, but the difference, which would be almost 2.5%, a little short of that, you'd still be getting an increase because the steps are in place, and we could help solve our fiscal problems. I mean, that's one example of the kind of choices we could make. So all I'm saying is there are solutions to this problem that if we came to the table, we could work out together. The fact of the matter is that when you talk about a 2.5% increase that we negotiated with the state employees, it does not include the steps, which brings you to about a 4.7% on average increase for every state employee. And I got to tell you, most Vermonters aren't getting 4.7% increase in their pay every single year.
Well, one recommendation?
Yep. Go ahead.
You take a look at teachers' salaries. When the state employees gave up 3%, the teachers went merrily on their way at 3 to 5% increases every contract.
Well, that's a fair point. That's a fair point. But I just want to make this point. I don't pay the teachers' salaries. Those get negotiated. The governor doesn't control that, as you know. Those negotiated school board across the state. I've got to deal with what I can control. And
but
the state
is controlling the property taxes now. And
no, well, that, but that's
true
not
enough,
really
right
true.
Now you don't. But that's something right. You ought to be looking at because
yep.
You'd have a hammer on them.
That's a good point, and that's, you know, part of this discussion of how do we bring school spending under control is how do we better governance system that's more accountable to the kind of crazy system that we have right now. So that's a really good point. But all I'm saying is I can't wave a wand as governor and say, hey, we're asking the state employees to make some sacrifices. Teachers, you've got to do it too because we don't control those contracts.
Thank you for your call. I appreciate it. I think we have one more caller. Let me take one more call before we let you go. We have Ted in Waterbury. Good morning.
Yes, good afternoon. Good morning, Governor. I was just wondering, I believe Vermont is shrinking the middle class. It's the second fastest in the United States. And I was wondering if you had any explanation for that. And one further question is, I was listening to a program there. How can we retain businesses, get businesses to come to Vermont? Do you think that a 0.7% payroll tax would be an incentive? And I'll hang up and listen to your response. Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
So, 2 points. Obviously, the challenge for Vermont is to grow it. Middle-class income, and those are the folks who are hurting. That's true across America. In other words, if you look at the national trends, we've got the biggest wage gap now since before the Great Depression, and we all know that it's a huge problem for the middle class, raising incomes. Vermont is no different. We are actually seeing, you know, some progress in Vermont. As we know, we got a lot of employers who are hiring. They just need more trained workers to do the work. We've got a fairly low unemployment rate compared to the rest of the country. And we just got more work to do. Having said that, in terms of the payroll tax, listen, we're not proposing a tax that business isn't paying right now if you provide insurance to your employees. And any business person knows that. As a small business owner myself, I can tell you that one of my frustrations as a business person was that I'd get 18, 20, 22% increases in my health insurance premiums on an annual basis from the people that were providing us health insurance. I was trying my best to obviously give good benefits to my employees, and I did, and I know my company still does. And it was the one cost that was constantly getting shifted to me because private payers are forced to pay the cost shift in the Medicaid underpayment. That's what's going on. So as a business person, you know you're paying that right now. It's called, you can call it a health care tax. You can call it a health care premium. Whatever it is, that premium goes up much faster than inflation and faster than you can bring in the loot to grow your business. So we're paying it now. The question for Vermont is, wouldn't we be a more business-friendly state by having a process that is transparent about that cost shift and actually starts to fix it? And I, as a business person, would say, yeah, I would rather be in a state where I see that cost, where government's trying to fix it and stop shifting it to my insurance premium, which is what's happening right now.
Last question. Your healthcare czar said this week that the cost of the Vermont healthcare exchange could hit $200 million. Are you embarrassed when you hear that number?
Well, we knew that going in. I mean, in other words, we were given by the federal government about $170 million in the first round of funding to build an exchange. And then we applied many, many months ago for additional dollars to get the thing to where we want it to be. The federal government, as you know, asked the states to either build exchanges or go with the federal exchange. We chose not to go to the federal exchange for reasons I've explained many times, because we actually give more money to Vermonters that are struggling, enhance those payments. Our reimbursement, or I should say our assistance to Vermonters, is better than the federal government's, and we had trouble integrating that to begin with. The other point that's sometimes not made about this website, which is really important to know, is it's not serving 30,000 folks who are on the exchange. It's serving 160,000 Vermonters. That's, you know, a third of us, more than a third of us, because it is also used, and we've used it, to update our Medicaid computer system. That's a big deal, because we were working off an old legacy system that was busted. So sometimes the point isn't made. We took federal dollars from a federal program to reduce costs that Vermonters would have had to pay to rebuild the infrastructure, technology infrastructure that's 30-something years old, to make sure that we can do our job better in state government. So, you know, you can always argue about the cost of technology. It is expensive. But I believe we'll have, you know, the change of circumstance working by the end of May. That's very much our goal. And if we do, it's serving 160,000 Vermonters every single day in a really important function. So sometimes when you read about this, you go, wow, you know, that's a lot of money to pay for just getting folks who are applying for Vermont Health Connect products, the insurance they want. Well, it's much bigger than that. It's actually providing the Medicaid delivery system that every state must, by federal law, deliver in a way that's going to be more sensible.
Thank you for your time. Have a nice weekend. Governor Peter Shumlin, we'll take a short break. We're broadcasting live here at the State House. We'll be back right after this.
It's on to the NCAA tournament for the Norwich University men's hockey team.
Could have better in the baseball!
George Kummer, the Cadets play host to the Panthers of Plymouth State in an opening round game Saturday night at Kreitzberg Arena. Join Corey Gustafson and me. Norwich and Plymouth State, NCAA tournament Saturday night on Northfield Savings Bank, WDEV Norwich Hockey Network.
Vermont Community Loan Fund borrower and Vermont business owner Bob Light talks about the Vermont Community Loan Fund.
When my wife Lee and I wanted to expand our Hollister Hill Farm bed and breakfast and to expand our farm store, we looked around for a loan. Traditional lenders weren't interested in our business plan. Then we heard about the Vermont Community Loan Fund. The loan fund looks at lending differently. It isn't just about the bottom line. It's about building Vermont's future, Vermont's businesses, and jobs.
The Vermont Community Loan Fund is a mission-driven lender. We focus on people, not profits. We're lending money to Vermont's small businesses to help them succeed.
The loan fund really looked at the whole picture with us. They saw how we were an asset to Vermont. Now, we're growing and proud to contribute to what makes Vermont work.
If you're looking for a business loan, look at the Vermont Community Loan Fund, where we look at lending differently. Visit investinvermont.org.
We are high performance, low pressure.
Stop dreaming and start driving.
Walker Volkswagen Stop Dreaming, Start Driving sales event. Stop dreaming about European-style Volkswagen Golfs, Jettas, and Passats. Stop dreaming about affordable German-engineered Tiguans, Beetles, and Sport Wagons, and start driving. Walker Volkswagen will make your dreams come true with 0% financing for 72 months, plus $1,000 customer bonus cash on Jetta and Passat TDI, delivering over 45 miles per gallon. Walker Volkswagen will make your dreams come true on the popular and versatile Sport Wagon. Over 20 in stock, each on sale and discounted $4,000 off from MSRP. Buying a Volkswagen is easy. With Walker's deeply discounted upfront pricing, you eliminate all the gimmicks and stressful negotiations in buying your next car. We are Walker Volkswagen on the Barry Montpelier Road, Vermont's source for everything Volkswagen. Stop by, call, or click walkervt.com and join in the Walker Volkswagen Stop Dreaming, Start Driving sales event.
Spring is here. It's a good time to start thinking about those home improvement projects. Glassworks in Waterbury is ready to help. Glassworks can repair or replace your old tattered screens. Remodeling your bathroom? Call Glassworks to set up a consultation for your new shower, tub enclosure, mirrors, and glass shelves. Glassworks technicians are Harvey Installation Master Certified. Call them for information on Harvey Windows and Doors. Glassworks, they're all about glass.
All right, we're back at the State House in Montpelier. Joining us right now, let's give a nice warm Radio Vermont welcome this morning to Senator Peg Flory from Rutland County. And yesterday, Peg was one of those of the 12 speaking against the extension of the Death with Dignity physician-assisted suicide bill. Can you explain to people why this came back up?
Last biennium, in order to get the bill passed, it had gone through four or five different times that the Senate essentially defeated it on a 15-15 vote. At the end, two of the senators who are no longer here put in an amendment that said the so-called safeguards that were built into the bill would be repealed July 1 of 2016 so that there would be no safeguards. So the committee recommended that we approve that bill, which gave them the extra two votes to pass it. This year, the committee said, oh dear, we can't do without those safeguards. So the bill that was introduced was to repeal the sunset for those safeguards. That's what the underlying bill that we were voting on 2 days ago and yesterday.
Okay. Describe to me, what are the underlying safeguards? What does that mean?
The so-called safeguards were a couple of different things. One was a patient had to wait 14 days in between the two requests for the prescription.
Okay.
The doctor that prescribed it had to notify Department of Health that they had written a prescription. Those were some of the safeguards. The two senators that had put in the sunset, their rationale was that the government has no business being involved, so they wanted to get the government out and essentially say that anybody that had a terminal diagnosis could request a pill to end their life or medication to end their life.
Okay. Why'd you vote against this yesterday?
I didn't vote against that. I voted to repeal. The question before us was repealing the underlying physician-assisted suicide law itself.
Yep, okay, all right. So why'd you vote that way?
I voted against it when it was up in last biennium. I voted against it again. I find it very bothersome. What the message it sends and some of the statements in support of it, I found even more disturbing. The statements were, for someone who has received a terminal diagnosis, and supposedly terminal means you're going to die within 6 months. And just as an aside, my mother-in-law was given a terminal diagnosis. she came to live with us because she couldn't go back and live on her own. And she was terminal. 10.5 years later, she did die. During those 10.5 years, she enjoyed a better quality of life than she had in the previous 10 years. But what this says, and the statements were, people don't want to have to burden their families. They don't want to go through the experience of having to have a loved one change their chucks, clean them up. I did that. I was my dad's caregiver when he was terminal. There wasn't one moment of changing his chucks or cleaning him up that I would have done away with. I think this sends a really, really poor message to the public and to kids. It says there are some conditions that maybe you want to consider suicide as a better option. And I don't think the state belongs in that position. I think it's wrong for the state to be in that position. One of the amendments said repeal it and instead replace it with essentially what doctors have been doing for years and years and years. Treating pain, renewing the prescriptions for pain so that you're managing good palliative care. We did that with my dad. He was on opiates to deal with his pain. Mm-hmm. Was he taking them more often than prescribed? Yeah. If he had chosen to take that whole bottle, it probably would have killed him immediately.
Mm-hmm.
So the concern was raised that perhaps families in attendance or doctors later on could be sued. The amendment said repeal the underlying, and no, they can't be sued.
We're talking with Senator Peg Flory. 244-1777 is our local number. Toll-free 877-291-8255. Moment of your time for our friends at the Vermont Coffee Company. It is coffee roasted for friends. Encourage you to pick up a bag or two and use that as an excuse to pick up your phone then. Maybe call a friend and invite them on over for a cup of Joe. A great dark roast blend. They also have a nice mild roast, and they're decaffeinated, has great robust flavor too. You'll find Vermont Coffee Company coffee at the Shaw's in Hannaford's, at all the independent grocery stores we encourage you to go to, as well as the major co-ops as well too. And if you can't find it in the store that you frequent, ask them for it. And if you can't get them to comply with that, you can always purchase it online. And that's at VermontCoffeeCompany.com. Want to remind you, too, about our friends at Jet Service Envelope. They can take care of any and all of your printing needs. One phone call away at 229-9335. They can do everything from printing your memoirs to that trifold brochure you need to have done, new letterhead, and some nice new envelopes for you, too. The selection pretty vast and deep, but they'll help you cut through that. That's Jet Service Envelope at 229-9335. And on the web at jetservice-envelope.com. Let's go to Morrisville. Richard, good morning. How are you today?
Hello. I have trouble formulating what I want to say because I feel that I can't communicate. But I see that people have deified doctors to the point that they can do no wrong. So what I would like to say is that anyone who reaches a stage where they choose to exterminate themselves, kill themselves, or commit suicide is a testimony to the failure of medicine, the doctors themselves. So I think if they're in the circle of the decision, that's bad because they failed, and what they want to do is to eliminate their failure. I just don't feel like that's a solution. There are others, okay. And it goes back a few years before all this disease sets in, and that has to do with health as opposed to medicine. Sorry about that.
All right. Thank you for your comment.
If I can address that, I mean,
yeah.
One of the areas of real concern was from the medical community, the doctors who said for them to have to tell someone that they have an option to kill themselves and write a prescription violated their ethics. A lot of them, the majority of the medical doctors, do not believe that this conforms with their Hippocratic oath, first do no harm. They're used to trying to provide assistance to people to get them better, or when that's not possible, to provide palliative care. They're not used to, and they're not in the business of telling someone, okay, if you want to choose, here's your prescription, go kill yourself.
Is there any indication, go back to this point you were making about the message that it sends to the youth, is there any indication that there have been more people, that anybody has viewed this law in a sympathetic way and taken their own life? I mean, is there anything like that that can back you up, that claim?
Yeah, there is. In Oregon, where once they instituted this, they were the first state, when they instituted the law, their percentage of teenage and young adult suicides, non-related to terminal illness, just suicides, increased by 18%. In the Netherlands and Belgium, where they do this, their suicides increase. The teenage and young adult suicide rates increased. What was really disturbing was the disability community, who had, I think, a legitimate fear that this sends the message to their people that, hey, sometimes when your life reaches a certain state, you ought to consider that you're a drain on society and be allowed to kill yourself. And they were, I think, validly concerned about that.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll also quickly point out that a couple of the problems in the existing bill that was passed does not, and we have the AG indicating that it's not clear enough whether pharmacists have immunity for giving this prescription, whether it's clear that the doctor that writes it has immunity, but the other healthcare professionals, it's not clear. And the letter from the AG's office indicated that if we're going to do anything with the law, that we address those concerns. And the committee agreed there were other problems, data collection and the two immunities, but that this was not the year to address those.
Thank you for your time this morning. Appreciate it very much. Senator Peg Flurry from Rutland County. We'll take our final break. We'll be back to wrap up after this.
Sacagawea led Lewis and Clark across the American continent. Tenzin Norgay brought Edmund Hillary to the top of Mount Everest. And in the Divine Comedy, the poet Virgil guides Dante through hell. All these realms pale in comparison to a world so daunting that many dare not utter its name. Insurance. Fear not, for in this pantheon of exalted guides is one more, John Jameson. Your personal guide through the world of home, auto, and business insurance.
That's me.
That's right, that's you, John. Combing through impenetrable forests of policy options. Cutting away red tape with his machete.
Well, it's more like a keyboard.
Go with me here, John.
Okay.
With his machete-like diligence.
Oh, I like that.
Advocating in time of need, John Jameson gets his clients where they want to go.
Sacagawea's got nothing on me.
Let's not push it too far, John.
Right.
John Jameson, loving insurance so you don't have to. Jameson Insurance, for home, business, and auto, in Waitsfield, Richmond, and Waterbury. Walk on in. JamesonINS.com.
Tired of grocery shopping at huge supermarkets with no personality? This is Tommy Huron, and I invite you to shop our well-stocked, right-sized family market in Waitsfield. Custom cut meats, fresh seafood and produce, gourmet cheeses, regular and organic groceries, and over 1,000 wines. Come and see Jeff and Bill in the meat department, Tana and produce, Gary in seafood, Nate in the deli, or Nancy and Liz in our incredible wine department. Family run for over 70 years. Mahurin Supermarket, Village Square Shopping Center in Waitsfield.
Moment of your time for our friends up the road in Middlesex at Red Hen Cafe and Bakery. You'll find them right off of Interstate 89, exit 9, and that is in Middlesex. And they're right there on Route 2, so it's no big adventure for you to be wandering through the back hills there of Middlesex. And boy, I'll tell you, some of the dirt roads out there, those of you that live on it know for this for sure, but wow, what a wild couple of days, because there was the melting and then the freezing of the ruts. So that won't be what you have to go through to get to Red Hen Cafe and Bakery, just on paved roads to get there, where you could stop in and enjoy one of their fabulous sandwiches they make each and every day. You could have one they make right there in the moment, have one of their fabulous grilled cheeses, for example. And you can also, you know, it's one of their soups available, too. And it's all about getting to desserts, isn't it? They make great baked goods there, baked goods that you can start your day with, 7 a.m., 8 on Sundays. If you happen on the weekend to ever see that coffee cake in there, oh, my gosh, that's a toe curler. And stopping in when you do, we always appreciate that you say howdy from us here at WDEV AM and FM. That's going to wrap it up for today and for the week here for us here on the program. We'll be back same time, same place Monday. Hope you have a fabulous weekend. Do come back and join us on Monday, which, yeah, thank you. This is FM 96.1 WDEV Warren, broadcasting from the top of Sugar Bush, FM 96.5 at Berry and Montpelier. You'll find us at 101.9 in the Northeast Kingdom and the flagship, AM 550 WDEV Waterbury Montpelier. News is next.
Radio News. I'm Rita Foley. Under arrest, 15 immigrants swept up by federal agents who are targeting dangerous criminals. We've learned the 15 are in this country under the president's order, shielding some immigrants from deportation. Our Jackie Quinn is in Washington.